The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
I'm delighted to welcome Dr. Marie Cassidy to the show. Such a thrill to be talking to you, Marie. You're very welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for speaking to me.
Oh, not at all. Great. You're a very familiar name to me and many of us, of course, as our former state pathologist. And I've got lots of things I can talk to you about, actually. But let's talk about the book, Body of Truth. So you've written this book. It's a work of fiction. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the book.
Well, it is. It's fiction. I mean, people keep saying it. The main character is probably based on me, but I think it's like a lot of authors. There's a little bit of yourself in all your characters, a little bit of all the people you know in all your characters. You can't help that. But it's about a forensic pathologist who comes from Scotland to Ireland to take up a post, and then gets launched into a world of murder and mayhem, which is mainly of her doing. She gets involved in the murder of a podcaster, and things take off from there. So it's, as I say, I'm not saying it's based on anything that I've ever done before. I had to be very careful not to have anything, you know, that could be linked back to cases that had happened in Ireland or even in Scotland. So I'm afraid it's all come from my own little brain.
Well, I've read it, and it's a really fantastic book. I must say, well done. And what struck me was, how did you get the inspiration to do it? I know you retired anyway, and you said you must do something else, I guess. But what made you write the book?
Because they just asked me if I wanted to.
Oh, even
it's
better.
As simple as that. I didn't have any great aspirations to be an author.
Yeah.
I've just been taking things as they come along. And as I say, I'm into my nonsense stage of my life. I went through the first third of the training, the second third of the doing, and now I'm just doing nonsense. So I'm just getting involved in things that I would never have dreamt of getting involved in before.
And having fun. But it must be very gratifying. The reviews have been really spectacular, Mary, as well, haven't they? You know, really positive reviews. And I think, you know, I've written a book myself, and you're worried, aren't you, that you mightn't go down well. But you must be very gratified by the reviews.
I was pleasantly surprised, put it that way, because I'd said at the beginning, I said, look, I'm not an author. All I've ever written are post-mortem reports.
Right.
And they're pretty dry.
Yeah, pretty dry, I know. And Mary, what struck me was, it's kind of Jack the Ripper-esque in a way, isn't it? And you mentioned Jack the Ripper in a couple of places. Now, we won't give away the storyline in the end. Was that an inspiration, those sorts of things like Jack the Ripper and real-life cases, I suppose, that you'd be more than familiar with?
Yeah, sort of. Well, I've always been, that's the kind of cases that I've always been really interested in. And I can remember my first draft, they said, oh no, this is too much like cozy crime. We want it a bit grittier. You know, people expect something a bit, you know, a bit more realistic from you. And I thought, oh, really? Do they really want that? And I thought, oh, well, okay, if that's what you think people want, I'll give it to them.
There seems to be this obsession, Mary, with real crime dramas, isn't there? And, you know, every time I turn the TV on, there's another one, isn't there?
I know.
And then we have all these Scandi noir things. What's going on, do you think? Is it the times we live in that we're drawn to these rather disturbing, sometimes real life stories, but also fictional ones?
I know. I mean, it's become a big business. I mean, all these podcasters, real life podcasters popping up with all of these. But I think we all think of ourselves as being amateur detectives. And in Ireland, everybody's nosy. You know, everybody wants to get in, and they want to be part of it. They want to be part of the story.
Right.
So I think it sort of suits that kind of psyche.
Right. And let's go back to the very start. What made you get into this pathology business? You went to Glasgow University, didn't you? And I know a bit about Glasgow, and it's got a long history of forensic pathology, hasn't it? A guy called John Glaister I've come across.
That's right, yeah.
And that must have been a superb place to study forensic pathology, I imagine.
Well, the strange thing was, forensic pathology always had a bad reputation, because it was always felt that the forensic pathologists were failed pathologists, if you like. And so when I had decided to embark on a career in forensic pathologist, everybody was appalled. Oh, the consultants and the professors in pathology thought, good luck, you're throwing away a good career. And I said, well, they've offered me a job and it sounds really quite interesting. I'm going for it.
Right.
And I've never regretted that decision.
No, it's saying, I did read somewhere, and I hate to disclose this morning, but you kind of said you prefer dead people, if I can put it that way.
Yeah.
Was that it? In other words, you could have gone into any branch of medicine, I imagine, but you were obviously drawn to pathology.
I could never find it. I was never a fit in anything else. I mean, you know, you go through medicine, go through medical school, and you do 6 months of this and 6 months of that and 6 months. And I was going through every 6 months and going, oh no, can't do that. Oh no, no, not good down that road. And I was running out of ideas when I hit upon pathology, and I thought, that sounds fantastic. Don't have to see these sick people. I sit in a little laboratory and I get little bits of them brought to me. And I thought, perfect. I could live like that forever. Right. And then I discovered postmortems, and then I thought, this is just fascinating. You know, because you've been taught in medical school that people come in and they tell you their symptoms, you make a diagnosis and you give them a wonder drug and everything, they get better. But that's not the truth.
Right.
Unfortunately, it's not the truth. Yeah. And I was fascinated about why the people died, even if they'd been in hospital for 6 months and they'd got the best of treatment. I was a bit like the families who would come to me and go, but he's been in intensive care. And I would go, yeah, that's because he was so sick. But I'll tell you, I'll try and work out why he died and why he didn't get better. Right. And I just found that fascinating.
And in the hierarchy of medical specialties, Mary, and I know lots of doctors, obviously, and they all, one looks down on the other, don't they? The surgeons think they're the best. That's still the case.
Of course.
You know? But where did you sit in the pecking order? And as you said, people try to dissuade you. Was it always seen as the poor relation, if you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. We are bottom feeders. Yeah. And we don't have a problem with that because we're happy.
happy.
Just leave us alone and let us go on with what we're doing, because In a way, we kind of moved away from mainstream medicine. We took a deliberate step away. So we are kind of a hybrid. We do a little bit of this and a bit of that. So we're, you know, sort of part-time lawyers, police, pathologists, scientists. So our colleagues are not the medical profession, really. Our colleagues are all these other interesting people, interesting people.
Which makes it fascinating, I would think.
Now, yeah.
And I must go back to the book, because you must have had a capacity for it, sort of that way. And in the book, now anybody squeamish, you know, you talk about maggots. And what I really liked was, in the book you said, some of these big, big, burly guards, they were very squeamish. They were, even though they're big guys, they would get very squeamish when they would see maggots. And this is a line, I've got to read it, a throbbing mound of larvae, you know. So you must have had the stomach for it.
Oh, yeah. And it's something it's not something that you can learn to like. You just have to go in there and face whatever comes onto your slab, as they say, and be able to cope with it and not get, you know, not sort of, you know, sort of go, oh my God, that looks awful or that's terrible. I mean, the true forensic pathologists go, what can I do here? You know, this is, I have not seen anything like this before. This is so interesting,
right.
Which is rather strange, but that's how we are.
And I presume you get used to it like anything. In other words, when you start out, it's tricky, I would think, but then eventually you get used to it. I've heard that with butchers, for example, they get used to all the blood and guts, basically.
Yeah, I mean, but you have to do that. You have to be able to cope right from day one. Otherwise, you're not any use to anybody.
Right.
I mean, I learned very quick on my feet, because dealing with postmortems, I went to a horrible thing, but a death of twin babies. And I was just in bits. And the consultant said to me, do you know, Mary, you're not helping here. That's for the family. It's the family who will grieve for these babies. You've got to work out what happened to them. And I thought, that was a quick kick up the pants. And I thought, right, from now on, that goes in a box. You just concentrate on getting the answers.
Yes, sleeves up and just get stuck in and do your job, I guess. But it's such an important area, isn't it, Mary? I mean, the relatives would want to know, I imagine. And then secondly, when it comes to court cases and all that kind of thing. So it's a really important task that you have to do there.
Well, it is. I mean, I think the people that, the families do appreciate what we do. I mean, the number of people who come up and say, thank you very much for, you know, what, and I think, good Lord, you're the person who lost somebody and you're thanking me for what I did. And I think, gosh, you know, but people realize that we're trying to get the answers that they're looking for. They want to know what happened. They want to know all the nitty gritty. It's not like the old days when, you know, people didn't talk about, you know, what happened to people. People want to know, you know, if they say, what happened to your Johnny? And they want to be able to tell people exactly what happened to Johnny.
Exactly. Yeah. And then another thing that struck me as well is, you know, the skill sets that you have. And somewhere in the book, I think you say women might be better than men at it. Is that the case, Mary? What do you think?
Well, I think it is nowadays, because it's very much a team process. When you go back to the Glaisters of this world, the old forensic pathologists, I mean, they were a top dog, and they would, what they said went, and I mean, they made some pretty outrageous statements, and nobody would ever question anything they said. Whereas nowadays, I think it's more collaborative, and I think that women are very good in a team. We work very well in right. teams. We don't have the ego that we need to be, you know, the top dog. So I think we fit into that team aspect that has now grown up, and that's very, very important. And also, we're very good at it.
Very good, exactly. That's what struck me as well. And talking about strange, John Harbison, who you probably have heard of, I knew him when I was in Trinity. He gave a lecture once in Trinity. A friend of mine, May, reminded me. His lecture was called How to Kill Your Granny, which I thought was rather sobering as a title. But one of your great quotes, which I love, is you said in an interview, and this is a great quote, and this has come back to haunt you, it's the man in your veg you shall be worried about, not the man under it, which is like a great
exactly.
quote. I presume you need a pretty good gallows humour, do you, Mary, as well?
You do. But it doesn't translate outside of the immediate working group.
No.
And it's a way of
coping, I presume. Yeah.
Of coping and keeping this situation, because I chose to do this. I mean, and I don't have any qualms about it, but there's often in the mortuary, you'll have policemen who honestly never thought about that aspect of the job, that they would be dealing with deaths, and they might end up inside a mortuary having to do something. And you've got to make sure that the team are all coping. And so humour sometimes diffuses the situation, and you know, because you can see when people are struggling and you have to sort of say something or do something that, you know, sort of distracts them in a
right.
way. And humour is a way of doing that.
Would you play music in the background? I know many surgeons
play.
Yes. Like what song yeah. would you play? Another One Bites the Dust, for example. That's a way to bring you do you play music in the background? Or did you
yes.
when you were doing it, the post-mortems?
Yes, and it's terrible because...
What would you play?
I like the radio, so So I would always have the radio on. But I mean, I was the sort of the commoner garden channels, whereas
right.
my colleagues, they would have classical music on. I thought, no, that would send me to sleep. I need something that jollies yeah. me up to keep me going.
Heavy metal when you get the saw out. No, that's gallows humour there as well. Now, talking about this, about having music and so on, your hobby is dancing, am I right? In other words, to relax.
Yeah.
I can imagine after a hard day's work in the post-mortem, what you do to relax. And yours is dancing, is that right?
Yeah, well, I started when I was in Dublin. I went to adult ballet classes and I just loved it. I just thought it was great fun, great exercise. And so now that I've retired, I've carried it on. I thought I better keep the old girl going.
Absolutely. And Dancing with the Stars, Mary, tell us about that, because that was a great part of your story as well.
Oh, that was so much fun. I mean, this is it. I mean, I'm getting the opportunity to do things that you wouldn't normally get. I mean, my poor partner, he couldn't get his head around why the state pathologist
yeah.
was his partner. What? It just doesn't make sense to him. And I said, look, it's an Irish thing. You'll get it after
get
a while.
Yeah. And Stephen Vincent,
so much fun.
He was your dance partner, isn't that right?
And it was, I met, meeting people that you wouldn't normally. And that's when I decided, you know, that sometimes live people are, you know, they're actually quite nice and they're good fun.
Absolutely. Mary, thanks very much for joining us this morning. And your book is called Body of Truth. And we'll wait for the next one. I bet there'll be a follow-up. So thanks very much.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.